Hello, Internet. This is Ewan Spend, CSE Insight, and Eurovision again calling. Join us as we join Eurovision again and we all travel back to London and Eurovision Song Contest 1968. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to another companion podcast, Eurovision Again's trip to 1968. And it's fair to say, I'm very excited about this one. London 1968. Anytime anybody's asked me, what year do you want for the next Eurovision Again over the last 18 months it's been running, I've always said 1968. It's the first colour. It's a huge shift in the presentation of the contest. It was not just about the songs, some of which are absolutely cracking, some of which continue to stay on my playlist. It's a great example of Eurovision used to showcase technology and try out new ideas. And debatable point here, but it's the contest that arguably finished off the move from a radio show with some TV cameras towards a television show that also had a radio broadcast. It's an interesting sort of slide between those two views in the first 10 years. Of course, TV was doing that slide as well, as was radio. So it's a wonderful example of how Eurovision, the song contest, illustrates the bits of the day. And now it's a wonderful historical document. It's a great show. It's fast moving. It's fast paced. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. Anyway, as with previous editions, we here at ESE Insight, ESEinsight.com, have partnered with the Eurovision Again team to bring you a companion podcast with the music of the day, some stories from the national finals, some actual memories from people who were attending the contest in 1968. Yeah, we got one, don't worry. All of that coming up. We'll also have the state of pop music, a look at the charts. We'll have that discussion with someone who's at the contest there. Songwriter Bill Martin, and we'll have a look at the state of the world and the impact of having a bigger view on society did for the youth of the day. But first, let's just sort of look at the rules and look at the contest in a little bit more detail. Okay, rules, not much has changed over the years since 67 and 68. Six contests. Voting wise, we're still 100% jury. In this case, each jury has 10 members. Each jury member gets one vote, which directly translate onto the scoreboard. There's no rank you 10 and we'll put them on a nice curve. There's no getting extra points because you are second with everyone in the jury. It's just 1 point per juror. Pick your one favourite song. It literally, it's not, is it the first past the post? Essentially, yes, because it doesn't matter if you were a juror with Spain or a juror with the United Kingdom, you could vote for any of the songs apart from yourself. So there's the same number of votes available to everybody. Whoever gets the most wins. And of course, as we all know, Spain here, 1 point victory, one juror. That was it. Just needed one juror who voted for Spain to switch to the UK. And the result changed. Incredibly, incredibly tight contest. But of course, the big change is colour. And this is a hard switch. Every song contest following this one is recorded in colour, even if in the case of 16 RTV he had to hire in the cameras, even though it wasn't actually broadcast in colour in Spain, we still have the record of that way. And again, it's all befitting the idea of the EBU using the song contest as a platform for new broadcast technology. You can also see new techniques and technology in this staging, not least we have one of the first projection walls here used to introduce the performers with film footage, no LED screens, just projection. This is 1960. 68 after all. But of course, we also have one important part of the Eurovision Song Contest, at least in the 60s, and that's the greatest host of the song contest of all time. Katharina Irina Lena Maria Boyle, Lady Saunders, formerly Imperiale de Principi di Francavilla. Yeah, Katie Boyle. It's much easier there. Hosting her third contest, she did 1960 and 1963 before this. She'll do 1964 in the future. She was one of the most recognisable voices in European pop music. She had a show called Pop Over Europe, which ran every month. And the various radio stations in the EBU would send over a member of staff with the latest hit records to London, literally bringing the vinyl over. Katie would record a one-hour showcase of music from across the continent, the hits of Norway, what's happening in the German charts, in Spain, and France, and the UK. This show would be recorded, it would be duplicated, and then all the radio staff would literally put the tape back in the bag they brought the singles over, head back to their own countries, and Pop Over Europe was broadcast all over Europe. Less of a podcast, this is the 60s after all, it's more of a postcast. Anyway. Speaking of Europe and popping over, how about we pop over Europe now with AJ Clay taking a look at the state of the popular music scene in 1968.
The UK charts in This Week in 1968 reads like a who's who of musical legends. The Beatles' Lady Madonna claimed its third week at number one, while Tom Jones's ode to biblical murder, Delilah, spent week six in the charts at number two. Cliff's Eurovision runner-up, Congratulations, meanwhile, was at number three. American stars also had a strong showing. Otis Redding's Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, released posthumously after the tragic 1967 plane crash, was at number four. Louis Armstrong's double A-side, What a Wonderful World and Cabaret, held number five. And The Four Tops' If I Were a Carpenter was at number seven. Esther and Abby Offerim's Cinderella Rockefeller at number six might be ringing faint Eurovision bells, and you'd be right. Esther represented Switzerland in 1963 with the runner-up T'en Va Pas, and with husband Abby, achieved a huge hit in 1967 with Morning of My Life, written by none other than the Bee Gees. This was performed on German show Gala Disc Evenings and was the first colour telecast in Europe, transmitted from Berlin by Eurovision. Thanks to appearing on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, they bagged the UK hit with Cinderella Rockefeller, complete with tubas, banjo and yodelling. The Offerims paving the way for Ilinka there. This song was said to be the last one played on pirate station Radio Caroline South, before the broadcasting ship was towed to harbour over unpaid debts. Rounding off the top 10 are King of the Buskers Don Partridge with Rosie at number 10, and at 8 we heard about The Legend of Xanadu by the beat band Dave D, Dozy, Beaky, Mick and Titch. Finally, Scouse songstress Cilla Black asked us to step inside love at number 9. In a parallel universe, she might have been our 1968 entry instead of Cliff. Relations with her manager Brian Epstein had soured by 1967, but according to her autobiography, Brian tried to pacify her by negotiating a deal to enter her in the following year's Eurovision. Cilla refused, because Sandy Shaw had won the 1967 contest, and she thought the chances of another British female artist lifting the trophy were low.
Coming out of the cold, rest your head on my shoulder and love me tonight. I'll always be here if you should need me. Night and day, step inside love and stay. Step inside love, step inside love, step inside.
Meanwhile, the album chart was distinctly bluesy and soulful. Otis Redding claimed number 2 and number 9, with History of Otis Redding and Otis Blue, while fellow soul sensations The Supremes took their greatest hits to number 3. The Four Tops had a greatest hit staying at number 5, and Wales' own Tom Jones clung to number 10 with 13 smash hits. Fleetwood Mac's self-titled blues album with Peter Green at the helm was at number 6. And the Beach Boys' soul-inspired Wild Honey, their worst-selling album at this point, clung on to number 7. Eurovision's Esther Ofarim held steady at number 8 with her husband Abby and their album 2 and 3. And in at number 4 was the soundtrack of The Sound of Music. And Austria's winner Conchita Wurst recorded her version in 2018 with the Wiener Symphonic Orchestra for the annual HIV/AIDS charity event Life Ball. She even dressed up as Maria in a promotional photo shoot, which is well worth a Google. The top spot, though, went to Bob Dylan, who returned to his folk roots with John Wesley Harding. All Along the Watchtower from the album would become famous in the autumn of 1968, with Jimi Hendrix's version hitting the charts. It was a Welsh takeover over in the European charts, with Tom Jones claiming number one in Austria, Belgium and Ireland with Delilah, and taking the Spanish top spot with I'm Coming Home. The Beatles' Lady Madonna reigned supreme in Switzerland and Sweden. Over in Germany, Manfred Mann's Mighty Quinn was number one. Now, while they didn't enter Eurovision, they did have a shot at the first ever homegrown British song contest in 1965. Co-hosted by Radio 1 legend Annie Nightingale, it was launched as a rival to Sanremo. Sadly, Paul Jones's song The One in the Middle was disqualified, as it was discovered to have previously been performed in public, which was against the rules. The place was given to Cliff Bennett and the Rebel Rousers with As Long As She Looks Like You. We see Esther and Abby Ofarim again over in the Netherlands with Cinderella Rockefeller, while France's Georgette Plana sang about Javanese tourism in Paris with the 1920 song Rikita. Georgette also covered the ubiquitous novelty holiday hit Y Viva España, a hit in English for Melody Festivalen veteran Sylvia Vrethammer. Antoine topped the Italian charts with La Tramontana. Outside of his successful career in pop and beefing with French Elvis Johnny Hallyday, he's also an avid sailor and adventurer, travelling over 17,000 miles on his schooner Om. Swedish schlager sensation Anna-Lena Löfgren was Norwegian number one with Lyckliga Gatan. She entered Melfest twice, in 1963 with Säg Varför and 1968 with Jag vill tro. Lyckliga Gatan borrows its melody from Il ragazzo della via Gluck by Adrian Celentano, who recent Sanremo covers night viewers will know for his nonsensical song intended to sound as if sung in English, Prisam kolnen sinacuso. As always, Yugoslavian charts are hard to come by, but a big hit from this year was Teresa Kesovia with Nasuncu. Teresa was one of the few Yugoslav artists to sell out both the Royal Albert and Carnegie Halls. She was chosen by none other than Grace Kelly to represent Monaco in Eurovision in 1966 with Bien Plus Fort, and in 1972 she represented Yugoslavia with Musica E.T. And that was the state of pop.
AJ Clay there with the state of pop. Right then, what about the state of the national finals? Well, there's not a lot of records on this one, but there are some interesting stories. But let's get one of them out of the way first. 1968. No, it wasn't rigged by Franco. There was the internal selection of Jean-Marie Serrat, who was set to sing La La La, but he wanted to sing it in Catalan. So he was replaced very close to the contest with Maciel, who sung the song in Spanish. That's there. All the other stuff, it appeared in TV documentaries. The filmmakers now said, nope, didn't happen. But it it did sound nice when I put it in the film directory. But again, no backup on that one. So let's just put that one to the side. Over in Ireland, it's worth picking out Alma Carroll's fourth place with Give Me All Your Love. Of course, didn't go through. We have Pat McGeehan going through on that one. But Alma would get to Eurovision in 1977 with the Swarbigs Plus Two. Portugal are returning from the 1965 contest and flying the flag for the country with Simone de Oliveira. Two songs in Festival de Canção this year, finishing sixth and eighth in total, but she'd have another go in the following year and be back on the contest stage for 1969. And now we come to the shadow of Cliff Richard, because it's a big year for Cliff, it has to be said. First up, Norway, where the winner of MGP, for the only time so far, didn't go to the Eurovision Song Contest, because Oddbar's song "Jeg har aldri vært så glad I noen som deg," I have never loved anyone like you, sounded a bit like Cliff Richard's Summer Holiday. Okay, I've had to listen to this. One phrase does. Maybe he heard it in a lift, I don't know. But it's a long way from lifting the song from 1963, putting it into Norwegian and taking it back to the British Isles in the Eurovision stage. So it didn't go through. Anyway, when I meant the winner, I meant the winning song, because Oddbar also finished in second place with the song Stress. So he took that to the Royal Albert Hall instead. Okay, second Cliff Richard bit, Sergio Endrío. He won San Remo with Canzone per te, but he also won it with Roberto Carlos. Each song in San Remo that year was sung twice, because it's the song that counts, not just the artist. And it's a song that's been covered countless times through the history of San Remo. It's one of those songs that sort of locks in. There's a lovely version of Il Volo doing it, if you want to find that on YouTube. But of course, as with San Remo, you didn't always take the San Remo song to the Eurovision Song Contest, although you did tend to take the artist. Sergio brought the song Marianne, and if you look at the running order, this is directly before Cliff Richard. Now, in a few months' time, Cliff is going to release a new song into the UK charts. It's called Marianne. Yep, he loved the song so much he went, I'm going to sing that. But he needed English lyrics, so he got one of the composers that he knew, in this case Bill Owen, to translate the English top 20 hit, Marianne. And if you're thinking, Bill Owen, that sounds familiar, well, better known by older UK fans as Compo from Last of the Summer Wine. Okay, finally, Cliff also sang for the United Kingdom. It's a one-off show hosted by Cilla Black, who, as AJ explained earlier, had turned down the opportunity to sing for the UK-hosted Eurovision Song Contest. Instead, she hosted the national final on her show, Cilla. Pure speculation on my part as well, but Cilla's single Step Inside Love was about to explode at this time. And it could well have been the Eurovision Song Contest entry, which would have meant we would have had a Lennon-McCartney song on the bill as well. That would have been fun. Instead, Step Inside Love was the theme tune to Cilla's show, so it became the theme tune to the national final of the song that was eventually selected. Cliff Richard there, doing the singing duties, drafted in sung six songs, if I recall correctly. One of them was chosen by 100% public vote. Of course, delightfully, in those days you didn't have a phone line to use. You could send in your votes in a postcard or a stuck down envelope, counted in the offices of the BBC for all the votes, and the result going out next week. Anyway, we are in the United Kingdom because of the victory in 1967 of Sandy Shaw with Puppet on a String. That was written by Phil Coulter and Bill Martin, who returned to the Eurovision that year by writing Congratulations. Obviously, went through the national final and then on to the show itself. I spoke to Bill Martin back in 2017 when he was doing a show up here at the Edinburgh Festival. The full interview is on ESC Insight. We'll link it back to it in the show notes. But a little clip from that interview here when I asked him how Phil and himself had written Congratulations.
We went out on the rabble, drinking and being playboys.
It's you and Phil.
Philip Coulter and I. And the old publisher eventually said, are you boys going to write another song? I said, of course we will. He says, Cliff's doing the Eurovision. So I like alliterations. And I came up with the idea, you've never heard this song. I can't even remember it. It was called My Magic Music Box. Spent a fortune on it. Went to the old publisher and he says, I could tell when he gave you money, he looked like Winston Churchill, and he came from behind the desk and he went, you boys, and he hugged you, and I thought, this is $5,000 coming up here. He went, I'm sure you've got something better in you. So I thought, oh, bollock. Phil went to a wee washhand basin and piano that we had in an office. I went to the pub, which I usually do. I couldn't think of anything. I came in the following morning and he had written, I think I love you. I think I love you. I think the world is fine if you will say you're mine. That was all. So he says, what do you think the following morning? I says, piece of rubbish. He says, what do you mean? I says, you don't walk up to somebody and say, I think I love you. You actually walk up and say, I love you, or I don't love you. Well, he says, well, help it. I says, well, it's 5 syllables. Why don't we call it congratulations and celebrations?
What, just literally pulled out of the air?
Yes. And that's all I wrote. And then...
Three words. Three, that's all you need.
And then I did the slowdown part, because I went, my lord... Remember, my lord, dun, 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 let the V on Rose. We go dun 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 dun. So you slow it down. So that's when we got to Cliff Richard doing it. They went, the Europeans love that.
So just that little bit of sort of Bavarian,
so
and German and Zen.
My contribution made magic. It was there, but you needed, instead of I think I love you, congratulations. Celebrations. That was it. That has now been played outside Buckingham Palace for the Queen Mother's 100th birthday. Cliff at the Diamond Jubilee. Cliff, I always say that if you're walking down the street in Edinburgh and you asked anybody to name the biggest songs of Cliff Richard, they'd come up with two. They'd either say Congratulations or Summer Holiday.
Bill Martin there, now sadly no longer with us, talking to me back in 2017 on Congratulations, Cliff Richard and the Eurovision Song Contest 1968. Of course, there's a lot going on in 1968 in culture as well. And we've got Finn Ross Russell here with his time machine to look at one of those points of contention.
...1968 was the first Eurovision Song Contest to be broadcast in colour. But outside of the Royal Albert Hall, television had already made great strides in impacting the state of European culture at the time. Although televisions had been commercially available during the 1950s, the 60s marked the true popularisation of the TV as a source of household information and entertainment. This meant that a generation of young people grew up in a more informed way than generations before them, allowing them to not only watch footage and news reports from events around the world, but also to be able to make calculated personal decisions as a result of what they were witnessing. In addition, as figures like Martin Luther King garnered attention for his activism around civil rights, and as protests such as those against the Vietnam War broke out, it inspired young people across Europe and the rest of the world to stand up for themselves. All of this culminated in 1968, a year in which anti-establishment protests sprung up across the world. The most famous of these protests was in France, where in May 1968, student protests around university reform escalated into a nationwide general strike. Although these protests are the most well-known and directly inspired similar movements in Italy, Sweden, and Yugoslavia over the following weeks, it is no coincidence that this followed student-led protests in West Germany, Poland, and Spain earlier that year. The other major protest movement in Europe that year was the Prague Spring, in which Czech First Secretary Alexander Dubček attempted to westernize the country through decentralizing the economy and easing restrictions on free speech. This was not received well by the Soviet administration of the time, who responded by sending their military to occupy the country. This in turn sparked protests from within and beyond Czechoslovakia against the controversial occupation, and inspired Dubček's quote that, "You can crush the flowers, but you can't stop the spring," the central inspiration for Ireland's 2007 entry. 1968 marked a significant cultural shift, as popular culture across the continent embraced colourful and more provocative fashion, electric guitar-based music, and liberal choices. Although hardly any of this made its way into the 68 contest itself, it's important to credit the television, the EBU, and subsequently Eurovision in indirectly becoming the catalyst for continent-wide societal change during a period when access to information inspired people to stand up for change together. Congratulations indeed.
And there we are, the Eurovision Song Contest 1968, a little look behind the scenes, what was going on in the world, and more. Thanks all very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it on Eurovision again. It's no Eurovision again. It'll probably stay up on YouTube on the official channel for about a week, so youtube.com/Eurovision, and you can watch Eurovision again for the 1968 show. Thank you, of course, as always, to the team behind Eurovision again that put that together. Of course, the EBU and the Eurovision.tv team are going to be talking a lot with the BBC and all the other broadcasters to get the clearance for these shows. Thank you to them. Thank you to AJ Clay and Finn Russell and the ESE Insight team for all pitching in to once more do a companion podcast. Thank you all out there for listening as well. ESEinsight.com, regular podcasts and articles as always on there. Patreon.com/ESEinsight to support us. But for now, there we are, the 1968 show. Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. So glad to be back again. Right then, that's it. Look forward to see you the next Eurovision again. Month's time, catch you in the October. But for now, be kind to each other, stay safe, and, let's just have a little dash of the guitars. You've been listening to ESE Insight's Eurovision Again companion podcast for London 1968, hosted by Ewan Spence, written by Ewan Spence, AJ Clay, and Finn Ross Russell.